a dense volume of red sand fell. This matter of sand falling seems to suggest conventional explanation enough, or that a simoon, heavily charged with terrestrial sand, had obscured the sun, but Mr. Murray, who says that he had had experience with simoons, gives his opinion that it cannot have been a simoon. It is our comprehensiveness now, or this matter of concomitance of darknesses that we are going to capitalize. It is all very complicated and tremendous, and our own treatment can be but impressionistic, but a few of the rudiments of advanced seismology we shall now take up, or the four principal phenomena of another world's close approach to this world. If a large substantial mass, or superconstruction, should enter this Earth's atmosphere, it is our acceptance that it would sometimes, depending upon velocity, appear luminous or look like a cloud, or like a cloud with a luminous nucleus. Later we shall have an expression upon luminosity different from the luminosity of incandescence that comes upon objects falling from the sky, or entering this Earth's atmosphere. Now our expression is that worlds have often come close to this Earth, and that smaller objects size of a haystack or size of several dozen skyscrapers lumped, have often hurtled through this Earth's atmosphere, and have been mistaken for clouds, because they were enveloped in clouds. Or that around something coming from the intense cold of interplanetary space that is of some regions, our own suspicion is that other regions are tropical, the moisture of this Earth's atmosphere would condense into a cloud-like appearance around it. In Nature, 20-121, there is an account by Mr. S. W. Clifton, Collector of Customs, at Fremantle, Western Australia, sent to the Melbourne Observatory a clear day appearance of a small black cloud, moving not very swiftly, bursting into a ball of fire, of the apparent size of the moon. Or that something with the velocity of an ordinary meteorite could not collect vapor around it, but that slower moving objects speed of a railway train, say may. The clouds of tornadoes have so often been described as if they were solid objects that I now accept that sometimes they are, that some so-called tornadoes are objects hurtling through this Earth's atmosphere, not only generating disturbances by their suctions, but crushing, with their bulk, all things in their way, rising and falling and finally disappearing, demonstrating that gravitation is not the power that the primitives think it is, if an object moving at relatively low velocity be not pulled to this Earth, or being so momentarily affected, bounds away. In Finlay's reports on the character of 600 tornadoes, very suggestive bits of description occur. Cloud bounded along the Earth like a ball. Or that it was no meteorological phenomenon, but something very much like a huge solid ball that was bounding along, crushing and carrying with it everything within its field. Cloud bounded along, coming to the Earth every 800 or 1,000 yards. Here's an interesting bit that I got somewhere else. I offer it as a datum in superbiology, which, however, is a branch of advanced science that I'll not take up, restricting to things indefinitely called objects. The tornado came wriggling, jumping, whirling like a great green snake, darting out a score of glistening fangs. Though it's interesting, I think that's sensational, myself. It may be that vast green snakes sometimes rush past this Earth, taking a swift bite wherever they can, but, as I say, that's a superbiologic phenomenon. Finlay gives dozens of instances of tornado clouds that seem to me more like solid things swathed in clouds, than clouds. He notes that, in the tornado at Americus, Georgia, July 18, 1881, a strange sulfurous vapor was emitted from the cloud. In many instances, objects, or meteoritic stones, that have come from this Earth's externality, have had a sulfurous odor. Why a wind effect should be sulfurous is not clear. That a vast object from external regions should be sulfurous is in line with many data. This phenomenon is described in the Monthly Weather Review, July 1881, as a strange sulfurous vapor, burning and sickening all who approached close enough to breathe it. The conventional explanation of tornadoes as wind effects, which we do not deny in some instances, is so strong in the United States that it is better to look elsewhere for an account of an object that has hurtled through this Earth's atmosphere, rising and falling and defying this Earth's gravitation. Nature, 7-112. That, According to a correspondent to the Birmingham Morning News, the people living near King Sutton, Banbury, saw, about 1 o'clock, December 7, 1872, something like a haycock hurtling through the air. Like a meteor, it was accompanied by fire and a dense smoke and made a noise like that of a railway train. It was sometimes high in the air and sometimes near the ground. The effect was tornado-like, trees and walls were knocked down. It's a late day now to try to verify this story, but a list is given of persons whose property was injured. We are told that this thing then disappeared all at once. These are the smaller objects, which may be derailed railway trains or big green snakes, for all I know, but are expression upon approach to this earth by vast dark bodies. That likely they'd be made luminous, would envelop in clouds, perhaps, or would have their own clouds. But that they'd quake, and that they'd affect this earth with quakes. And that then would occur a fall of matter from such a world, or rise of matter from this earth to a nearby world, or both fall and rise, or exchange of matter process known to advanced seismology as celestial metathesis. Except that if matter from some other world, and it would be like someone to get it into his head that we absolutely deny gravitation, just because we cannot accept orthodox dogmas, except that, if matter from another world, filling the sky of this earth, generally, as to a hemisphere, or locally, should be attracted to this earth, it would seem thinkable that the whole thing should drop here, and not merely its surface materials. Objects upon a ship's bottom. From time to time they drop to the bottom of the ocean. The ship does not. Or, like our acceptance upon dripping from aerial ice fields, we think of only a part of a nearby world succumbing, except in being caught in suspension, to this earth's gravitation, and surface materials falling from that part. Explain or express or accept, and what does it matter? Our attitude is. Here are the data. See for yourself. What does it matter what my notions may be? Here are the data. But think for yourself, or think for myself, all mixed up we must be. A long time must go by before we can know Florida from Long Island. So we've had data of fishes that have fallen from our now established and respectabilized Super Sargasso Sea, which we've almost forgotten. It's now so respectable, but we shall have data of fishes that have fallen during earthquakes. These we accept were dragged down from ponds or other worlds that have been quaked, when only a few miles away, by this earth, some other world also quaking this earth. In a way, or in its principle, our subject is orthodox enough. Only grant proximity of other worlds, which, however, will not be a matter of granting, but will be a matter of data, and one conventionally conceives of their surfaces quaked, even of a whole lake full of fishes being quaked and dragged down from one of them. The lake full of fishes may cause a little pain to some minds, but the fall of sand and stones is pleasantly enough thought of. More scientific persons, or more faithful hypnotics than we, have taken up this subject, unpainfully, relatively to the moon. For instance, Puri has gone over 15,000 records of earthquakes, and he has correlated many with proximities of the moon, or has attributed many to the pull of the moon when nearest this earth. Also, there is a paper upon this subject in the PROC. Roy. SOC of Cornwall, 1845. Or, theoretically, when at its closest to this earth, the moon quakes the face of this earth, and is itself quaked but does not itself fall to this earth. As to showers of matter that may have come from the moon at such times, one can go over old records and find what one pleases. That is what we now shall do. Our expressions are for acceptance only. Our data. We take them from four classes of phenomena that have preceded or accompanied earthquakes. Unusual clouds, darkness profound, luminous appearances in the sky, and falls of substances and objects, whether commonly called meteoritic or not. Not one of these occurrences fits in with principles of primitive or primary seismology, and every one of them is a datum of a quaked body passing close to this earth or suspended over it. To the primitives, there is not a reason in the world why a convulsion of this earth's surface should be accompanied by unusual sights in the sky, by darkness, or by the fall of substances or objects from the sky. As to phenomena like these, or storms, preceding earthquakes, the irreconcilability is still greater. It was before 1860 that Puri made his great compilation. We take most of our data from lists compiled long ago. Only the safe and unpainful have been published in recent years, at least in ambitious, voluminous form. The restraining hand of the system, as we call it, whether it has any real existence or not, is tied upon the sciences of today. The uncanniest aspect of our quasi-existence that I know of is that everything that seems to have one identity has also as high a seeming of everything else. In this oneness of allness, or continuity, the protecting hand strangles, the parental stifles, love is inseparable from phenomena of hate. There is only continuity that is in quasi-existence. Nature, at least in its correspondence columns, still evades this protective strangulation, and the monthly weather review is still a rich field of unfaithful observation, but, in looking over other long-established periodicals, I have noted their glimmers of quasi-individuality fade gradually, after about 1860, and the surrender of their attempted identities to a higher attempted organization. Some of them, expressing intermediateness-wide endeavor to localize the universal, or to localize self, soul, identity, entity, or positiveness or realness, held out until as far as 1880, traces findable up to 1890, and then, expressing the universal process, except that here and there in the world's history there may have been successful approximations to positiveness by individuals who only then became individuals and attained to selves or souls of their own, surrendered, submitted, became parts of a higher organization's attempt to individualize or systematize into a complete thing, or to localize the universal or the attributes of the universal. After the death of Richard Proctor, whose occasional illiberalities I'd not like to emphasize too much, all succeeding volumes of knowledge have yielded scarcely an unconventionality. Note the great number of times that the American Journal of Science and the report of the British Association are quoted. Note that, after, say, 1885, they're scarcely mentioned in these inspired but illicit pages, as by hypnosis and inertia, we keep on saying.